Welcome to episode 144 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. In this special episode of the podcast, we review all of the controversy and drama from the 2019 NRL Grand Final matches. We give our Super League Grand Final preview, World Cup Nines, as well as Toronto Wolfpack and the Dally M Awards. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 144 of the Rugby League Republic podcast, where we aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, Rugby League. This is Rugby League for the people. I am your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, have you calmed down from all the drama of the NRL Grand Final?
Well, Dr. T, I think I'm calm, but I've got to say my opinion on certain situations has changed by the hour. So, at this time of recording, I'm feeling one way, but I could be feeling the complete opposite way tomorrow. So, I'm going to need some meditation. I'm going to need some sort of recovery after this because... Yeah, it's been unbelievable, but you know what? Rugby league, twists and turns all over. Just when you thought the newsroom around the NRL would get smaller, it's actually gotten bigger this last week. So much to talk about. How are you feeling after an historic grand final there, Dr. T?
Well, I got to tell you, I'm exhausted because it was a jam-packed... and it wasn't even the grand final, to be honest, that is exhausting. In this modern age, you've got to wake up the next morning and look at what's on Twitter and then realize how exhausting it is because the controversy continues unabated. You know, we're now on the Tuesday, so two full days later, and the controversy still reigns supreme. All of the relevant, talking shows, footy shows on Fox and all the other things are going haywire with the discussions about the controversies in the Roosters and Raiders game, and so much more that was discovered afterwards, which we're going to get into very soon. A lot of things happened that you would not have known if you had just watched it on TV and. With some friends over a barbie and went to sleep afterwards thinking that the Raiders got rorted, you would have been completely oblivious to what went on. So a few things that we're going to dive into, but why don't we do it? Let's just get into our six tackles, shall we?
Let's do it right now.
All right, tackle number one. So we're going to start with the big one. We're going to review the big NRL Grand Final where the Roosters defeated the Raiders 14 points to 8 after a mammoth tussle where the Roosters ran away with it at the end with a controversial try. Well, the try wasn't controversial. It was actually a brilliant try. What led to that try was controversial, and we'll dive into that as well. But look, the Raiders, they gave it their all. It was 8-6, I think, at halftime, the Roosters in front. And look, for a while there, the Raiders, after halftime, just a mammoth weight of possession in their favour, and they couldn't quite convert that into tries. Even a controversial sin binning. Of Cooper Cronk in his final game before retiring. A professional foul was called where he tackled Josh Papali without the ball about 5 metres from his try line. First of all, big props to be able to actually put on a big hit on Papali for someone as small as Cooper Cronk.
Yep.
Let's not forget that. That was a good hit, but just a little bit too soon.
Yeah.
And obviously they had no choice but to give a professional foul and 10 in the bin. But the Raiders couldn't do anything with that overlap. They Yeah, so unfortunately, all of the great things that happen. Let's go back a little. Well,
yeah.
Let me just get your views on what you thought of the game.
Yes.
And then I want to actually dive into quite a few talking points about that, about the grand final. So first of all, what was your impression of the game? How does this rank amongst other grand finals?
Oh, look, I've got to say, I can't remember, it's kind of, memory is a funny thing. Because I feel like when you're younger, you kind of remember the finals a bit more than what you, more vividly than what you do as you get older. Now, in the 2000s, they seem to all blur in, I've got to say. But this one, I think, is one that will be remembered for a long time because it was a great tussle back and forth. The reality is it was a very low-scoring game, but there was not a lot between the two sides. And you did see some innovative attacking play. You did see some controversial moments. There was quite a lot in there to unpackage. So I think it was actually a great game to watch. It was a great spectacle. So I think the NRL would be happy on that front. But look, the controversy, and Dr. T, I think we need to think about the word controversy at the moment because it feels like just about every game in the NRL has some sort of controversy at the moment, that even the word controversy has lost its meaning. Because controversy has become regular, right? We might need to come up with a different term for different levels of controversy, low level, high level controversies. But look, at the start of the game, both the teams, they got a set each before the charge down. The charge down that actually hit a trainer for the Roosters, and look, I don't know what the rules are on this, but I didn't understand if a Roosters trainer was accidentally hit, how does the ball go back to the Roosters? I still did not understand that one. I felt that was controversial.
Well, I've got an answer on that, Tish. I consulted the, what would you do if you have a question about refereeing? You consult the Grand Master of Referees, Cameron Smith. And yes. And no, I'm not kidding. I actually did look up. There was a similar situation.
My God.
In State of Origin, where when Shane, I forget when it was, but Shane, I think Shane Hain was the referee. Similar thing happened. There was, I think it was a streaker or so, someone running onto the field was tackled by about 20 security guards, and Shane Hain, and it was actually near the Blues line. I think Queensland had the ball and was the last tackle or something like that, and Shane Hain was about to give it to the Blues, but what happened was Cam Smith told him that the rule is it's got to be a scrum and a six again to the attacking team, which was them. So they got with about 20 meters from the Blues line another set of six. And that was the rule. And I remember, at the time when don't remember it, but I saw it today. I relived the memory. You're talking about bad memories. I had to relive this on YouTube or whatever, where the commentator said, he's right. That's the rules. And here is Cam Smith schooling Shane Hain on the rules. And sure enough, it comes up again. So the rule is basically if there's any interference at all from any outside non-player, including or not, I think non-player and including officials like referees, then you're forced to call the scrum and give it six tackles to the attacking team wherever they are on the field.
Yeah,
so okay. That's the rule. And even though it seems unfair, that's what happened. That's the rule.
Mm.
Now, it's only controversial. I think you're right about we've got to use the word controversial carefully.
Yeah.
I think it wasn't controversial if you look at the fact that that's the rules. It was unfair in the sense that it's not, it's a situation that you think it's not really fair for the defensive team to have to defend another six tackles for no reason.
Yeah.
Well,
my argument is who is the defensive and attacking team in that situation, because the Raiders player is attempting a charge down and has every right to even if the ball goes forward, has every right to, you know, get his hands onto the ball that will start the set of six. So technically, I actually felt the Raiders were the attacking team in that precise moment where the trainer got hit.
Well, and this is the thing. One of the many talking points, I guess,
the grays.
Actions for the NRL to take out of this is you got to do something about this rule. It's a stupid rule. So you got to change it. But my other question that I had as I was watching it was, what's a trainer doing on the field after 3 minutes?
Yes.
Are they tired after three? What do they need? Like, really? And so really there's another question about get the bloody trainers off the field. They don't need to be there after 3 minutes for, you know, what, you need to give them water?
Yeah. Come on. I mean, well, look, New South Wales is facing a drought at the moment. And
I hope he was water restriction compliant.
That is my point exactly. The Water Restriction Compliancy Act that needs to be enforced
of the NRL
because they're wasting water left, right, and center. If they need a drink after after an anthem, a botched welcome to country ceremony.
Well, I mean, that's okay. If you want it, let's talk about that next.
Okay, well, we can skip on that. But look, yeah, because this game's got plenty to talk about. But look, the other thing I've got to say, Sam Verrills scored that first try, you know, on the fifth tackle, try off the dummy half. I've got to say, it kind of reminded me of Roy Simmons, 1991, you know, the sort of the dummy half try sort of thing. And look, good on him. You know, he's a player that, you know, he was. It's his rookie season. He played a handful of games this year. You know, unlike Payne Haas, who actually played 3 games last year, but still got rookie of the year. I don't understand how that works. But anyway, Sam Verrills, you know, good young kid. He scored a try. You know, he's kept Friend out of the side towards the final series, and that was great. And I really liked, though, then how the Raiders, they kind of got themselves back in it. And really, you couldn't blame that on the Roosters or anything like that. It was based on merit. They were outplaying the Roosters, and you know, Jack Wyden scored a great try. He kind of, you know, after sustained pressure to actually get on the scoreboard, and I think in the middle of all of that, Latrell Mitchell scored a penalty try, and that led to 8-6. So yeah, great first half.
Just a penalty.
My apologies. Yeah. And then look, in the second half, yes, it was the Raiders that came out again. They looked the stronger team, that had the dominance all the way up until the controversial six again. No, it's the fifth tackle call, and then then it's just the place straight afterwards that actually scored the try. Tedesco scored the try. And look, it kind of took the wind out of the sails of the grand final. I've got to say, the last 10 minutes was a little hard to watch because you kind of knew the end. You know, it looked like the Raiders won't come back. But look, I've also got to give credit to the Roosters because the Roosters were under the pump and they were able to sustain all that pressure. You know, they did get one decision that went their way that was quite crucial. But in the end, I mean, defense is what wins grand finals and what wins premierships, and they certainly show that. So I don't think we could, as much as we want to talk about the controversy, and it is controversial, and it's probably what, I don't know if, I can't sit with this is what, that six again incident being what actually cost the Roosters, the Raiders the game. I feel like they had lots of opportunity to score a try. They just couldn't do it. And, you know, maybe there's a couple of times where they should have actually tried to level up with a goal as well. I think they did do that in the end because I think there was one opportunity that they did that. But, you know, they probably had opportunity to go up, you know, to go up by two, but they decided not to take it. I think they kind of could have played a little bit smarter and they just went missing an attack. There was a couple of, you know, I remember BJ Lelua, he kind of had his winger, Rapana, open. And he decided to take the hit and pass rather than just offload the ball, and it would have been a try. And I think it got called forward anyway. So, you know, just little things like that. They just didn't execute when they needed to. The Roosters got, you know, a handful of moments, but they were able to execute their moments. And in the end, that's what won them the game.
Yeah, I've got to say, look, we do need to dive a little bit into this six again thing. But
yep.
before we do that, I mean, yeah, I got to agree. Look, as much as, look, I was supporting the Raiders on the day. I was, you know, I wanted that underdog story. I thought everything about what Canberra has done to turn that club around, get the community involved and all that stuff, and we'll talk about that in a minute as well. But in terms of what they've done on the field and what Ricky has done this year has been outstanding. And to think that they, you know, they got the better of the runaway minor premiers Melbourne Storm twice.
Yep.
Once in the final series. They also, you know, matched it with the Roosters. Weren't able to get away with it on the big day, but certainly were capable. You know, of defeating them. So, and in fact, at one point, I've got to say that towards the middle of the second half, I mean, the weight of possession, the way they were playing with so much more aggression and enthusiasm. Mm. The Roosters looked tired. It looked like it was only a matter of time before the Roosters would cave, but they didn't. And this is to me, this is a key thing. I totally agree with you. As cliched as it is, big defences inevitably do win these big matches. And it wasn't the Roosters' star-studded attack, although they had a hand in that breakaway try towards the end there for Tedesco. It was actually all the groundwork was done by the defence. The Raiders, normally quite a very strong attacking team with lots of options, they tried their hardest. They just didn't put it together. You come up with some examples of Lelua, you know, not passing when he needed to against to Rapana, and that would have been a try. There were plenty of other instances where they had six tackles, you know, repeated sets of six against the Roosters, and they just weren't able to do anything. At most, all they could do is put, you know, they had an excellent short kicking game. Because they kept getting the ball in ground, in goal, and got the ball back for six tackles. But that's not enough to get it through the line, unfortunately. And, you know, and I felt as well that they were actually really killing them up the middle. They were really rolling them back. And it was all because of, you know, Papali and a few others were just doing a lot of damage. But, again, that means nothing if you can't convert into points.
That's right.
And it's just typical of, you know, this is what underdogs have to go through, is that in the end, you know, the basics have to be done, and they didn't quite do the basics. So I kind of felt that, look, you know, anything that we talk about, I have to say, for those of you who are Roosters fans, you know, that we're not taking away at all from their deserved victory. I think they deserve.
I think so too.
And if you look at the campaign this year, not just even that win at the grand final, they didn't win the minor premiership, you know, but it was almost like, and having read about Trent Robinson's kind of preparation of this team heading into the grand final, there was a sign there that he's a very smart man. A lot, like to a man, a lot of the Roosters players say, look, he's the smartest coach I know, kind of thing. He knew that to defend a title, you have to be different from how you were when you actually won it that first time. You have to change things up. Expectations are different. And I remember reading an article where he basically said that very same thing and how he would look at planning the season differently. He controversially, the only coach to do this, rested some players throughout the year, and no other coach did that. And he knew that he needed to do that to make sure that they were ready come finals time. And the results speak for themselves. I mean, you know, back-to-back premiers, the first time in 26 years or so, in the NRL, and you know, unbelievably deserved, I would say. It's a shame that the Raiders came so close, but they'll learn from that. Hopefully they'll learn that, you know, it wasn't that they certainly didn't choke on the big stage. They just needed to execute a little better. And certainly that first try to Verrills showed that whoever the Canberra player, the Canberra lock, I think, who couldn't get back.
Tarp 9.
Yep, he couldn't get back in time, and you know, that is a kind of a defensive lapse that you can't – it's unforgivable with only a few minutes into a grand final to be that half asleep. I mean, that's not right. But look, that – so I think we both agree that the Roosters deserve to win given the circumstances. But let me just quickly go back to that six again thing.
The so six again. Yeah.
That six again call, the controversial call. And it was controversial because what happened was – you know, this was after a long, sustained period of attack. And they were on the fifth tackle. Jack Whiten gets the ball after a kick was put up. It bounced back from it wasn't Jack Whiten. It bounced back from someone. But somehow Jack Whiten gets the ball, and he sees that the referee, I believe it was Ben Cummins. Was it Ben Cummins, I think? Signaled, you know, waved the arm in the air to signal six to go. And then not long after, sticks his hand straight up, and I think you can hear him saying, last tackle, last tackle, last tackle. But by then, I think the damage is done because he looked up and he saw the six tackle ruling and played his last set as if, you know, as if it were, you know, he took the tackle basically.
Yeah.
Now, that was basically a stuff-up from the referee. The correct call was that it was last tackle because Tedesco did not touch the ball, so it was literally the fifth tackle. But this is a problem. Once the referee says six to go, all of a sudden your options change.
Yeah,
you don't think anymore. Oh, we've got to really, you know, pass it along the line so that someone can grubber it in, so we can get another repeat. You know, pass it to someone who can put in a one pointer. All of those options go away because you're thinking, I've got six more to go. I'll just take the tackle, do the safe thing, and that opportunity was denied for the Canberra Raiders. And I think that's where the controversy comes in, and people are quite rightly livid that the referee made the wrong call in the first place.
Yep.
Instead of just sticking with it, you know, changed it midway through. And you can't really do that as a referee. It's because it's not like tennis. So I see a lot of people referring to, and I'll get your views on this, the tennis situation where if the ball goes out, and you play as if the ball was in, and then you hit a winner and you think, oh, okay, you know, I won that point. Then they go to the video ref and all that kind of stuff, and they find, well, actually the ball did go out, so the point goes against you, for instance. Well, the problem is, in this situation, it's not like as if the ruling of last tackle means that the ball is dead and therefore Raiders have no option anyway. Because the ball is still live at that point.
So
any decision made by the referee is actually consequential. It's not like, oh, well, they knocked it on anyway, so even if they had scored a try, it would have been called a knock-on. No, it wasn't like that at all. It was a legitimate last tackle play, and they thought it wasn't. They thought they had another six tackles up their sleeve. So very controversial, but I personally think that the right thing the right decision was obviously that it was the last tackle. They have to own up to it, the NRL, that they made a mistake, rather than going on about, well, it was the right call, that it was actually the last tackle. The fact is, the wrong call is what should have stood.
Yeah.
And that's my final view on it. It should have stood because they, you know, well, no, actually, no, it wasn't even a wrong call. Like, they should stick with the fact that they were going to give them the six tackles. It would have been incorrect,
but
they have to live with it as a referee. And by changing it, they have actually changed the complexion of that game. So the NRL needs to come out and say, sorry, we stuffed up, but, you know, them's are the breaks. We obviously didn't mean to do it. There was a, you know, and I think most people would be forgiving of that because, you know, that's what happens. But anyway, I'll get your views on, what have you flip-flopped on this one? Is that the thing that you've been thinking about lately?
Yes, I have been. But look, I think Ben Cummins had the classic, you know, filling out a form in a pen scenario, right? Where you've, you know, you've tried to write an A, it doesn't look like an A, so you try to correct it, and then you know it's sort of
exactly what it's like.
And then it just makes it worse and worse, and then you just got to go back up, wait in the line again, and get another form, and then you can just have to start again, you know, and that's kind of what happened here. He called the wrong tackle, had the wrong call, but because Canberra had already seen it, you know, then. Now, he did try to correct it, because I think there was four or five times you could hear where he's gone, no. Well, he didn't say no. He just said, last tackle. But, you know, you've got dual referees there. And I think I remember watching it with some people that did actually say, well, this is the problem with having dual referees, right? You got voices saying everything. And that's not to also say, players in the opposition also trying to confuse the Canberra players as to whether it's sixth tackle or last tackle by shouting out as well. You've got the audience there and everything. So, yeah, like it, the right thing, look, what, I suppose they did the right thing because of what they did, went back to the original call, but the right thing should be just to play on and just live with the bad decision. I know that doesn't sound too good, but look, the way I look at it is in the 111 or 12 years of rugby league that we've had in Australia, and even before then, there was a rule before we had all this technology, and the rule was the ref's call can't change. You know, when the referee made a call, you had to live with it, whether right or wrong, whether you agreed or disagreed, they've made the call, nothing can be done about it. But here you've got an incident where the ref did make a call, it was wrong, and they tried to do something about it. You know, they kind of went against a way what it's kind of always been, and I think that that's kind of incorrect. I did see some footage that Jonathan Thurston was interviewing Trent Robinson about the incident, and Trent Robinson, he's obviously trying to defend it, and you know, he said something very interesting, and I think this is what my final resting place on this is at the moment, which is he said that Trent defended it by saying, well, the thing is, in big games like this, you have calls that go your way or go against you. And we have no emotions about, we were better able to handle the refereeing bad call and take advantage of it. And we took advantage of it and we handled it better than our opposition tonight. And that's why we won. And if you think about it, the Cooper Cronk incident, yes, it was. It's not as controversial because they have been calling it that way, and it was sin binnable. They really couldn't do anything about it. But if you play it in real time, it's very simultaneous. It's like a fraction of a second. So they were a little unlucky, the Roosters, I feel, for that sin bin. But you know, his point was that in the modern game, it's how you handle calls going against you or refereeing bad calls is a very big determiner of how you're going to win the game. And I do believe he's right, but I also think that the game is at a scary place if that is actually the case, where, it's not necessarily the best team that wins, but it's the team that can handle the refereeing better that wins. That's essentially what he's saying, and that's probably been the angst of most rugby league fans out there, that they feel like the game is no longer won based on merit, but it's won on which team can handle the referee better. And that's kind of the gripe that a lot of people have with Cameron Smith. That's a gripe with a lot of players, with other players as well, getting into the referee's ear. It's more about how you handle the referee and less about your rugby league ability now. So, and he kind of inadvertently said it, but it is actually true. And I think it's almost like an admission. So I've got to say, well done, Jonathan Thurston. If he should probably become a lawyer, because he did nail him with that one.
Absolutely, yeah. I was going to say that post-game, there were quite a few things that really added to the drama, and that was one of them. It was brilliant television, very uncomfortable. Awkward television.
Yeah.
And definitely, annoyed Trent Robinson, I think, in the line of questioning. But, he sort of said, oh, are you suggesting that we were kind of lucky kind of thing? And he sort of said, no, I'm just asking what you feel about that. So what your thought about that situation. So, which is, fair enough. And that was one, yeah, you're right, that was one very interesting post-game sort of thing. The other one just was the Clive Churchill Medal.
Oh, yes. So
obviously, so the Clive Churchill Medal was awarded to Jack White. And I've got to say, I called it from, you know, with 20 minutes to go.
Yeah.
And I thought he was clearly the best Raiders player. I think he was the most dangerous in attack. He played a brilliant game, basically. He did everything he could and almost pulled off a victory, you know, for them. Without him, they wouldn't have even been close. They wouldn't have got many of those sets of six anyway, because it was almost always up to him to do something on the last play. Now, I thought it was kind of obvious that he was going to win. I didn't think any of the Roosters players deserved to be ahead of Jack Wyden. Now, the controversy is that it's come out since the game. Couldn't tell during the game itself, but it's since come out that Jared Warrior Hargraves indicated, I don't know who he told, but he has since come out and said that he was told by an unnamed official that he was the recipient, and he, to the point that he actually was told to line up and be ready to go on stage. Now, I thought that's a bit odd, and then I since found out, and if any of you have recorded on the tele, from the telly, the grand final, you can go back and look at the very, you know, the post match, you know, on the post match, what do they call it, the ceremony, whatever it is, where you've got Wayne Pearce on stage, Bradley Clyde, Joyce Churchill, and Luke Ricketson, as well as Todd Greenberg. And what happens is you see Todd Greenberg go up to the Channel 9, the host, the presenter, and he says something to him, and then the guy sort of nods, and then he says, okay. And then he goes back and he's about to launch into, you know, thanks everyone, blah, blah, blah. And the first... you know, first cab off the rank is, of course, the Clive Churchill Medal announcement. And he then announces Jack White, and then he comes on and everything. When you look at the replay of what happens when Todd Greenberg tells him who it is, and then he goes and you can see this kind of game of Chinese whispers where he – have you seen this, Tish, or am I –
yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, he tells Luke Ricketson – now I'm no lip reader, but some people have done the due diligence here and say that this is what he's saying to him. He's basically saying to the people, first to Luke Ricketson, Jack Wyden won it. He's got a then he gets a surprised look on his face. Then he turns around and tells Bradley Clyde, who has this very shocked look on his face and then kind of has a bit of a laugh. And then they tell Wayne Pearce, who you don't really the footage sort of cuts out as soon as they tell him. So you don't know what his reaction is. I thought that was fascinating because, first of all, it's ridiculous. It's like a pack of school children.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Wyden got it. Pass it on. Jack Wyden got it. Pass it. That's what it looked like. It was so ridiculous and amateurish.
Yeah.
But which it really shouldn't have been. I think the best way to do it is to just get one of the judging panel to come up there and announce it and give it to them. I think it's as simple as that. But anyway, apparently what had happened was
yes.
Jared Warrior Hargraves thing was kind of confirmed that he was in the running to get the award because I think it was Laurie Daly and Mal Meninga or whoever it was who are two of the judging panel had, you know, points-wise, I think Jared was ahead, but they hadn't got Darren Lockyer's votes.
Yep.
Up until the very end, and he obviously must have pushed for Jack Wyden, who put him over the top of everyone else. So, amateur hour from the NRL, Tish. What did you think about that?
Well, yeah, look, this is why we're getting a new upgrade, because apparently what I read and heard was that Darren Lockyer had a problem with the app that casted his vote, and that's why it was delayed. So, obviously... a poor Wi-Fi signal, you know, get LTE there, Darren, you know, top up your credit, you know, because obviously another kerfuffle, very much an amateur hour. And look, if you analyze the game, look, I'm not saying Jared Warrior Hargraves had a bad game. He was on there for a long time. You could see him in force. You could see him very dominant with the ball. I think statistics shows that he was doing well. But you know what? You brought up something very good earlier, which is you talked about how much meters Canberra were making through the ruck. That's kind of the position where he's supposed to be defending. So it's a bit of a... I kind of felt that, he might have had a great game from an attacking aggression point of view, but they were also making plenty of meters on the territory of the field that he's supposed to be defending. So I didn't really see how they could give it to him. But, he is a great player and, he didn't get sent off this time, so which was good. So on the flip end, Jack won, and I think everybody felt that he deserved it. And I think in the end, no matter how silly it looked, the whole mess, and rugby league's been known to look silly at times, which this grand final kind of showed, but... in the end, I think Jack Whiten deserved it. And, worthy Clive medalist. And, another year where we've had a sort of a losing team person winning the Clive Churchill medal. Now, if Canberra Raiders supporters feel hard done by, just want to remind them of 1989.
That's all I'll say. Well, that's the thing. It's I think Tigers.
You get some your way, you get some not your way. It didn't happen for them, but 30 years ago, it went their way, even though it shouldn't have.
Wow, there you go. Revenge is sweet, and 30 years late, apparently. But yeah, look, absolutely, yeah. 30 year anniversary of that first victory of Canberra, and unfortunately, wasn't to be. And look, I've got to say, the other thing, again, we've spoken about the game and all the things, the controversy, and I forgot to mention again that Six Again, hashtag Six Again, was trending worldwide on Twitter.
Wow.
on Sunday night, yeah. Which is kind of ridiculous. But anyway, the thing about, where to from here, well, the Roosters will be thinking that they could possibly go three in a row, which hasn't been done since the Eels in 81, 82, 83. And that would be an amazing feat if they were to do that next year. And the Raiders, look, they could take a lot of comfort knowing that they have matched it with the best and they were oh so close. And they've still got a lot of improvement in them. I mean, they did very well, but there were things that they could have done better. As you said, the ability to deal with the refereeing adversities is something that they need to learn from. And the other thing is that despite what happened, I think it was a success for the Canberra Raiders. They did very well to really bring the community. And I would not have expected this from the Canberra Raiders in years gone by. But, when I looked into, heading into the grand final, there was some interesting articles in the media about how what they've done to rebuild community trust and to bring the community along. The whole thing about Mal Meninga blowing that horn, which is, and then the Viking clap, which was amazing.
Head of football operations at Gold Coast, Mal Meninga, by the way. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway, let's not go there. But also Canberra legend, but the Viking clap as well, which I know we've spoken about in the past, which actually I looked into it and it wasn't, it's not so much a ripped off thing as people think, because it didn't start from Iceland soccer team. It started from an American football team who then a Scottish soccer team appropriated it, and then Iceland and then the Raiders, because the Raiders, I think they went on a study tour years ago to America and came back with all these great ideas about how to involve the community, how to get how to improve memberships of young kids, by doing things like, giving kids greater access to some of their players, that kind of thing. And obviously the Viking Clap was born out of those study tours. So, there's a lot that can be said about what Canberra has done to engage their community. I don't know if you can say the same about the Roosters. Again, the Roosters have this tag now of, the sombrero, the salary sombrero, buying the premiership, no juniors, all that kind of stuff. they haven't really changed any of that. You know, you would think with all the success they've had that they would own the eastern suburbs of Sydney in terms of junior. Instead, they get they're still battling against the AFL and rugby union. So, you know, on the other hand, Canberra has done well to turn around, you know, the fans that they'd lost over the years from Super League.
And Brumby mania.
That's right, the Brumbies and all this sort of stuff. And now here they are, they've united that community, and it was a sea of green at the grand final. And to see them all doing that Viking clap, very clever kind of marketing kind of gimmick, but still a brilliant and very emotional kind of thing as well, and a great way to start that grand final. And yeah, so they've done so much. So look, both teams have a lot to look forward to next year. It was a super grand final. I think it was up there with one of the best. I mean, it had everything, and you know, but I would say, as a Tigers fan, you would you know, probably not think of that as one of the greatest grand finals, but it was sweet revenge from 1989, put it that way.
Yeah, that's right. And look, well done to Cooper Cronk. I think the first halfback since Peter Sterling to win 3 in a row.
Absolutely, and that puts him, you know, squarely in the space of legends.
Yeah, well, because, I was going through the immortals. He is only Reg Gasnier and Johnny Raper have got a better record than him in grand finals. And just about in everything, he smokes all the other immortals. So I've got to say, a candidate for the immortals, I think Cooper Cronk statistically is up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I don't know about immortal because I think immortal is about the player. It's not just about achievement, it's also about their talent, and they've got to be like really a cut above everyone else and a lot way above everyone else. And I don't know if he is that. Having said that, and I've said this in the past as well, when you look at when you take him out of a side like the Melbourne Storm or out of Queensland, they suffer because he does the unsung things. He kind of, you know, and yeah, look, I forgot to mention that we do farewell Cooper Cronk. He is now moving into retirement and probably, I would say, you know, into the media because he is such a well-spoken player and very intelligent. Oh, so do you have the latest news? Do you? Rumours?
No, no, I'm just not too sure if he's got the voice for
Hello, sir. Well,
do you have great victory? What was that, Cooper? Could you speak up? Anyway.
That's right. Well, him and Darren Lockyer can host a show called The Raspy Rascals. And because, that would be a difficult one to listen to. But, yeah, well-deserved. Well done to Cooper Cronk. I mean, I think I've said this before as well, that out of, you know, a few years ago when I went to the Fan Fest in Sydney when they played the Cronulla Sharks, he was one of the players that, you know, one of the Melbourne, probably the only Melbourne Storm player that, you know, actively went and spoke to fans while they were waiting in between kind of bits of the ceremony. He actively went to the fans and signed things and, you know, met with fans and encouraged some of the others in his team to do so. Seems like a good guy overall. Don't know what issue he's had with Cam Smith, but that probably elevates him in my book. No, not at all. But he seems like a genuinely nice guy, so good on him. And, you know, and he, look, no doubt he made the difference. The Roosters hadn't won since 2013 and looked like with Mitchell Pearce there, they weren't going to win anything. And they saw an opportunity to buy him, and they did. And 2 premierships in a row. And that's no coincidence, I would say.
And imagine if Canberra had him instead of the Roosters, who would have won?
Well, that's a, you know, it's a good rhetorical question.
Yep. Absolutely. But speaking of rhetorical questions, tackle number 2.
Yeah, let's go to tackle number 2. All right. Look, some of these will be a lot quicker, and I think this will be a lot quicker. Speaking of back-to-back, maybe we should have seen it coming because the women did it first.
Yeah.
The Broncos won ladies first. They won back-to-back premierships against the Dragons again, I think, 30-6 this time. So this time they did even better than last year. And well done to the Broncos. Look, I didn't catch a lot of this match, unfortunately. I was in between venues. But I did see the ending, and I thought, that was so impressive. And look, I think there were, so the Dragons were playing good this year, and this probably shocked a few people. I think we were split last week as well on this. This is just an example of how experience wins against momentum and against current form. Because they did what they needed to do. They've been there before, and it was a big match, and they absolutely blasted them away. So well done to the Broncos for winning the NRL Women's Premiership 2 years in a row.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think last year they actually played the Roosters, but look,
they did. Yep.
But similarly, a whitewash in the end, and that big game experience which the Brisbane Broncos had really showed. Well done to the girls. I mean, two in a row, you really can't fault them for that. The only, I suppose, the disappointment is we would have loved to have seen another thriller, and we haven't had that in these grand finals yet. They've kind of, the first two haven't been that close. But let's hope that the talent pool can increase. There could be more girls playing and hopefully some more competition so that in later years we could have an absolute great grand final, and I'm sure next year will be better. It's building every year, isn't it? So let's hope that next year will be stronger than this year.
Absolutely. Let's move on to tackle number three. And look, the other game on grand final day, which requires us to talk about because it was just an amazing, amazing match, was the State Cup Championship, which was the Newtown Jets against the Burley Bears. And look, the Bears were at one point 16 points to two at about the 52nd minute mark or so. And that's when the comeback happened from the Newtown Jets. I caught the tail end of this and I got to say, I saw the best bits, obviously, from a Newtown Jets perspective. This was probably the most amazing finish to any grand final you will ever see. Better even than the Darren Albert last 10-second try against for Newcastle against Manly in 97 to win their maiden premiership. This was an unbelievable last couple of minutes where the Newtown Jets looked like they were coming back. They were down 16-14, and they looked like they had opportunities. They totally stuffed it with an intercept pass with about a minute and a half to go, looking like it was all over Red Rover. The Burley Bears, going up the field a little bit. They completed their set. And with only about, say, 20, 25 seconds left, the Newtown Jets had the ball, but they were a good 80 metres away from the try line. And I've got to say, as a wanting the Newtown Jets to win, it was very frustrating because, Tish, what do you do when you're 80 metres out, grand final, you've just got the ball and you've got only 25 seconds left? Well, what they did was they took a hit up. And I thought, are you guys kidding me? And it was very frustrating. Mm. And I thought, you guys have just blown it. With 10 seconds to go, the Newtown Jets get the ball. They were, I believe they were probably 40 out from their own line. They spread it to the left. And a short kick, kind of a chip and chase, was put into play. I thought, that is going nowhere. It's all over Red Rover. And the most amazing bounce of the ball you will ever see, it totally wrong-footed about four or five Burley Bears players, including a couple of Newtown Jets players, into the arms of, I forgot what his name was, Magoulis or something like that.
Billy Marlowe, yeah.
Magul, yeah, who basically ran onto the ball and caught it off the first bounce, and there was daylight ahead of him, and he just ran straight through, and as he landed, the clock went 80 minutes as he scored the try, which basically sealed the victory. A last-minute, last-second play Unbelievable. Have you ever seen any finish to a game as miraculous as that?
Well, yeah. You know what? It kind of reminded me of the Tedesco try in the grand final. Sorry, in the State of Origin 3.
State of Origin, yeah.
Except for the fact that, you know, New South Wales had the ball with about a minute left. In this case, yeah, the Burley Bears, they were. Look, put it this way: the whole game, I was thinking to myself, you know what, we could have 20 teams, we could have 22 teams. Look at the talent that's out here. Look, you know, they're playing really good class, really good level of rugby league, and they can't even make it into the NRL. And I thought about that for all the way up until the last minute of the game, and I thought, now I know why these players aren't in the NRL. It's the decision-making ability, isn't it? As you said, you know, you take a hit up, you know, you don't kick it in a corner into a scrum, you don't try to wind the clock down, you don't even try to play the ball square, you just take a hit up in the middle of it. What? I had no idea what they were doing, but look, well done to the Newtown Jets. A great victory. They were behind. It looked like the Burley Bears were pretty dominant throughout the whole game. You know, they scored a try. I think Sione Carter scored, you know, a little bit earlier than that as well. I think it was like, you know, with about five or six minutes to go. And then, you know, that they sort of, you know, they were down the whole game, and then they only were leading right in the last minute when now, was it Billy or was it, I think it was actually the other centre. I think it was Ferris that actually scored that try. But look, well done to the Jets, and I think they're the feeder club for Cronulla, which, to be honest, if you look at Cronulla's season this year, the players that played well, it's usually been their not well-known players. So probably a lot of the team that probably played for the Jets this year were probably involved in this victory. But look, well done to them. And, you know, the Jets kind of live again. And, you know, I know the Burley Bears aren't the North Sydney Bears, but having the two emblems and the, you know, kind of takes you back to the good old days of rugby league. But look, well done. And let's hope next year the Queensland outfit can win, because I think it's been a few years in a row now that the New South Wales side of things has actually won. So, let's hope that Queensland Rugby League can also produce a victory in the not too distant future.
Absolutely. And it's not ironic, I think, that the Jets pulled off a Queensland move, winning at the last minute, which is what they tend to do in Origin. But and let's not forget, I think it was Greg Eastwood, formerly of the Bulldogs, who actually retired, I think he's officially retired. And because of that, and they had already won at that point when they scored the try, they gave him the chance to kick the goal from out in front. And he did, to make it 20 points to 16, which was, a fitting way to cap off his career. Well done to the Jets. And interesting, the Jets and the Roosters, two of the original teams from 1908, they're represented on grand final day. There's something really nostalgic about that.
Yep. And look, just to get your final thoughts on this, you know, Greg Eastwood, great career. Kicked a goal. You know, the hidden talent that we did not know about him, could do it all. Do you think immortal level there, Dr. T?
Look, I think you've been throwing around immortal too much in this episode. Let's calm down with the immortal. It was an immortal, maybe an immortal nudge of the ball to bounce it back to the Newtown Jets. But apart from that, no.
Okay.
I say not. But look, let's move on to tackle number four. All right, so we've given our review of the grand final, but there was another big thing that happened during the week, which was the Dally M medals. And the Dally M Award, sorry. And so this, obviously the big Dally M medal winner was won by James Tedesco, who was actually on a bit of a hat trick. And the hat trick was, if he, going into the grand final, he had, obviously this year's, he'd won the best player in, you know, in State of Origin series, the Brad Fittler medal. He had won the Dally M medal. He was on track to potentially win the Clive Churchill medal, which wasn't to be, because I thought he actually was kind of nullified pretty well, actually. So had he won that, though, he would have been the first player, I think, ever to have won all three of these big awards, one for club, one for the grand final day, and one for State of Origin. But it wasn't to be. But having said that, he won. So let's the final sort of tally was he won with 34 votes, just in front of Cam Smith on 31 and Mitchell Moses on 29, which I'm a bit surprised that Cam Smith was as high as he was. I don't think he's had that great a year. But anyway, having said that, that's the way it is. So, yep, congratulations to James Tedesco, who got close last year as well. And let's not forget the Dragons NRL Women's Centre, Jess Sergis, won the female Dalian medal. You know, unfortunately wasn't to be on grand final day, but a great victory for her. And obviously we picked it.
Yeah.
So this is one of the – in fact, we picked both. Well, I think we picked both Tedesco and Sergis. So well done to both Jess and James for winning those awards. Now, let's just quickly have a look at some of the other the main ones. So the other main awards were the Proven Summons Medal, which is for sportsmanship, and that was given to Bulldogs skipper Josh Jackson. So well done to him. And that obviously there was one example of that where we talked about that West Tigers goal kicker, Paul Momorowski, where he missed a goal to force Golden Point. It was actually pretty recently, around 21. And Josh Jackson went over to him and consoled him. You know, it's in the spirit of the game, and that's what we want to see. So well done for that. Tedesco also won the Peter Frelingos Headline Moment Award for his last-ditch try, which you referred to earlier, in State of Origin to win the decider. Payne Haas won the Rookie of the Year. Again, how you can do that when you were a rookie last year, I don't know. That was almost as miraculous as that Newtown Jets bounce of the ball that he won that. Melbourne coach Craig Bellamy won Coach of the Year. Just as we suspected, they valued the fact that, you know, he won their third minor premiership in four seasons, and they did it in a runaway fashion. So well done. What other ones are there? Let me just go through. Captain of the Year to Cam Smith, obviously being runner-up, would be a main thing of that. So there you go. Let's just roll through the team. So fullback, obviously, James Tedesco. Winger of the Year, Ken Mamalo. So that completely stumped us. Mamalo from the Warriors. Neither of us picked him. Latrell Mitchell won Centre of the Year. Cam Munster won the 5/8 of the Year. Mitchell Moses, halfback. Prop, Payne Haas. Hooker, Cam Smith, obviously. Second row was John Bateman from the Raiders, an Englishman winning an award. This is outrageous, but and probably well-deserved. Cam Murray, Lock of the Year. I think I picked that one. And on the interchange, we saw Brandon Smith. I think we picked that one as well. Overall, not too many controversial decisions there. Some surprises. But, Tish, what did you think about James Tedesco and any of the other awards?
Well, look, I think congratulations to all the winners. And you look all deserved. You know, we're going through the centre of the year. And look, I do think Ken Mamala is a great player. But Moses Sully also had a great season. And if there was a most improved, I'd certainly think that he would be up there for contention of that. Yes, look, I spoke about the Payne Haas thing. Look, great season, great year, but look, he has debuted. So I don't know how that can work. So that doesn't make the whole thing, you know, interesting. I suppose a few things that I do want to know. I didn't actually see the James Tedesco speech. So I was just wondering if he thanked Jason Taylor for getting rid of him at the Tigers or not. And the other one is Referee of the Year. Do we know who Referee of the Year was? There an award for the Referee of the Year? Or what about
Cameron Smith was there, so.
Oh, Cameron Smith, okay. Okay. And look, Water Boy of the Year definitely probably has to go to the Roosters grand final winning Water Boy, whoever his name is, because they don't like to list that stuff. And funnily enough, they didn't actually thank him for the victory at the end. So there you go.
Wow, there you go. All right. So that's the Dally M Awards, and we've got to move on to tackle number 5. And look, just a quick one. We spoke about the Toronto Wolfpack, and they they ended up winning. So they won the million, what's it called? The
million pound?
Million pound game.
Mm. Well, not Euros anymore, is it? I suppose.
What's that, sorry?
Not Euros anymore.
No, that's right. And so they won this one. I'm trying to find the score. Unfortunately, I can't find the score. But anyway, they won it, I think, by quite a fair margin. I think it was 24-6. I could be wrong. And so they defeated Featherstone Rovers. And look, prior to the game, the Super League had basically the RFL, the Rugby Football League, basically said that if they were to win that, they would be promoted to the Super League. They ticked all the other boxes that need to be ticked. So having won that, that means they are in the Super League next year, the top flight. And first of all, congratulations. And also, very historic, they are the first transatlantic team to be in the Super League. And that means that the Super League is now has teams in France, England, and Canada, would you believe?
So amazing.
We thought the NRL was advanced with having the Auckland Warriors in 1995.
Yes.
And you know, 24 years later, we still have only Auckland or New Zealand. We just rebadged them.
Yeah.
But here we are in the Northern Hemisphere, where the game originated. They have gone in leaps and bounds and have opened up their doors to teams from other countries, not one, but two. So now we have a very interesting set of circumstances next year. Looking forward to it. It should be awesome. Congratulations, Toronto. Tish, what are your thoughts on the Wolfpack making their way to the front pack?
Well, look, I've got to everybody involved in creating the Toronto Wolfpack needs. They all deserve an applause because, look, they've done an amazing thing to be able to get into the Super League. It's a great thing for rugby league. It's a great day for rugby league, expanding in the Northern Hemisphere. And look, well done to the Super League of having an open mind about expansion and actually, not necessarily trying to control the whole situation, but allowing, you know, other bids to come through and having a system where the game can expand. And I think that's ultra healthy. And who knows, one day, Dr. T, we might even have a Super League team from Australia. That's how good they're going.
Wow. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be pretty good.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, and shall we move on to tackle number 6? All right. So, the Super League, speaking of, we have a epic grand final coming up this weekend. We've got St. Helens up against... Well, we thought it was going to be Wigan Warriors, but actually, in the semi-final, Salford Red Devils.
Marwan Kukash.
Kukash, his team have made it to the grand final, I think for the first time ever, and they defeated Wigan Warriors 28-4. So they did it emphatically. And now this is a team that is, you know, they see themselves as a team of misfits. And obviously the front and center, the star of the show was Jackson Hastings,
yep,
who actually has a connection to England. His grandmother was born in England.
Mm.
He is clear to represent Great Britain during their winter tour of New Zealand and Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Later this year or beginning of next year. We've got Salford against St. Helens. What do you think about this? What are your thoughts about, first of all, Salford Red Devils making it to the big league?
Well, obviously a great thing. Salford Red Devils, we talked about expansion. We talked about a rugby league, not necessarily, Toronto, a team coming out of a hockey area. Well, the Salford Red Devils, I believe they're actually right next to, they're in Manchester. And the big team there is also Manchester United. And I think they actually get the name the Red Devils. I think the idea behind the Red Devils actually originated from the Salford team, and it's kind of become the nickname of Manchester United through that. There's a bit of a shared connection with the meaning. So this is a team This is a team playing in a city that is not necessarily renowned for rugby league. So I think, again, a really great thing, you know, very similar to perhaps the whole, Canberra Raiders story a little bit. You know, they're in a city that, you know, knows of rugby league, but probably, you know, it's not the biggest sport in that town. And, you know, having their team in the grand final, I think is going to be a great thing for that area. And let's hope that they can actually get a win, because it's the underdog going through. Although St. Helens, they've got a champion team. A lot of the great English players, UK-based players are actually playing for that team. But let's hope the Salford Red Devils can go there. And I think a few years ago, before the introduction of Marlon Kukash as their owner, they were struggling to even field a team. So I've got to say, Marlon's done a great job actually being part of that club, and very controversial, but in the end, this is what, having entrepreneurship and business acumen in rugby league, this is the result that it could produce, and let's hope the Red Devils can get over.
Yeah, and look, just looking at their squad, you know, apart from Jackson Hastings, a couple of familiar names. We've got Ken Seo and Krishnan Inu from formerly Parramatta Eagles player, is also part of the Red Devils squad, which is interesting. But then you look at St. Helens, who are, you know, probably heavy favourites. We've got Kevin Naguama, Johnny Lomax, Zeb Taya, Joseph Paulo, Lachlan Coote also plays for St. Helens. So they've got, you know, they've got quite a few stars there as well. I would think that they would be considered favourites, but I'm going to tip the Salford Red Devils, because I think that the way they dispatched of Wigan will send shockwaves throughout the Premiership. And if I'm not mistaken, they did actually win. Well, they won a Challenge Cup in 1938. And my mistake, they have actually won championships before. They've won six, so they're not. This won't be their maiden victory, but they haven't won since 1976.
Wow!
So that is a heck of a long time, 43 years.
Yeah.
That is up there with the Cronulla Sharks not winning for 50 years or so. So there you go. Salford Red Devils, I'm picking them. I think that they'll win, but it remains to be seen. And, that game will end the domestic seasons of the major leagues around the world. But, Tish, I know we just did six tackles, but I'm going to do a Ben Cummins, and I'm going to signal six again.
What?
Can you give me another one?
Okay, I'll give you another one.
Give me another one. And just before we go too far into it, I'm going to say last tackle. Okay. So let's just call this a last tackle, all right?
All right, yeah.
Look, we've talked about the domestic games finishing, but we've got, obviously, the international games coming up. We've got the World Cup Nines happening in a couple of weeks, actually next week. So we'll give our proper preview next week. But I thought we'd start by discussing two of the major teams and their squads. And let's have a quick look at Australia and England. Let's call it the preview, because, you know, coming off the excellent grand final that we just saw, we actually have a squad that was named by Mal Meninga as the Australian Nine squad. So let's see if I can find the list. This is always good when you try and look on the fly. Apologies for that. Oh, here he is. So here is the squad, and you tell me what you think, because these are not necessarily, the top players, but they're players that obviously have a lot of speed and probably have what it takes to do something in this Nines version of the game. So we've got Josh Adokar, Daly Cherry-Evans, Damien Cook, Boyd Cordner, Nick Cottridge, Tyson Frizzell, Wade Graham, Payne Haas, Ben Hunt, Luke Keary, David Clemmer, Latrell Mitchell, Cameron Munster, Cameron Murray, Josh Papali, James Tedesco, Jake Trbojevic, Paul Vaughan, and Jack Whiten. Well, that is a super squad. Yeah. You know, what do you think about that squad? Is there anyone that they that missed out that is entitled to feel a bit annoyed?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Look, I don't know what's the status of Nathan Cleary. Because I don't think, maybe he's ruled out because of some surgery, maybe. But, you know, winning halfback for New South Wales sort of misses out there a little bit. But look, I think overall a great squad. You know, the national side, both in 9s and 13s, will have to change this year anyway because of all the retirements that have been happening lately. So it's a bit hard to tell who's actually playing for Australia and who isn't at the moment. But look, and look, 9s is a different form of the game.
Yeah, sorry, let me just, I think I just made a mistake. I think I actually read the Kangaroos squad, not necessarily for the test, not necessarily for the World Cup 9s. So I have to apologise. Can I, this is a typical, can I do a do-over?
I think so.
I'm going to do a Ben Cummins. This is literally a Ben Cummins reenactment.
Mm.
I made a mistake, guys. I apologise. I have to find where is the squad? So here we go. Let me have a look at the actual 9 squad. So that was a test squad, which is an amazing squad anyway. But let me just go back and find where the actual squad. Wow, I can't find it now.
Okay, I think I've got it. It's the World Cup 9s Australia squad. So let me read it out. Josh Adokar, Jai Arrow, AJ Brimson, Nathan Brown, Kyle Felt, David Fifita, Tyson Frizzell, Ruben Garrick, Wade Graham, Clint Gutherson, Ben Hunt, Mitchell Moses, Ryan Pepenhausen, Kalen Ponga, Curtis Scott, Cody Walker. I've got to say, a squad full of debutants who haven't played. Some of them haven't played Origin or for Australia. So it's almost...
And some of them are not real people.
Yes, AJ Brimson.
Who is AJ Brimson?
AJ Brimson plays for the Gold Coast. and so does Jai Arrow. And so that's actually two more players than what the Tigers, who finished 9th, got in that lineup. They got nobody. So yeah, a bit of an odd one. I think they've just gone for bolters, you know, people that are very fast and so forth. You know, I suppose, you know, not having Papali there is a good move actually, because you know, I don't think the 9s is sort of built for the front rower type of players. So look, an interesting squad, I got to say, but yeah, I don't think it's got that championship material. This is going to be a very interesting tournament if this is Australia's team, because obviously Australia would have gone in as favourites, but I think some of the other nations who are going to pick a side that's closer to their top 9 players, all top, you know, going to have a lot of more of their top stars, is going to do better than what the Australian team is, because I think the Australian team is fairly within the field compared to the others. I mean, we've got some good Origin experience there, but I think overall, you know, David, I just think there's it's a young squad, but I don't think it's necessarily the best squad Australia can field for the 9s. What about your thoughts, Dr. T?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I think there's quite a few players that I would think are much more suited to 9s-style play who aren't there. You know, just, you know, random off the top of my head, Michael Morgan, where's he?
You know,
from the Cowboys. You know, from the Storm, I mean, I get Ryan Pappenhuyzen, but Curtis Scott, I mean, you know, I don't know. I would think even putting someone like Kafusi there would have been better. Or is he there? No, he's not there. Josh Adokar. I mean, some of them are obvious. Josh Adokar makes sense. Kyle Felt, you know, well done. I think that's a deserved call up to. And again, this is kind of potentially this is seen as a pathway to test status. Tyson Frizzell, you know, of all the Dragons players to pick, they chose Frizzell and Ben Hunt, who have not been, you know, I would think Paul Vaughan would be a better choice than Frizzell in this context, which I think is quite odd. You know, Clint Gutherson and Mitchell Moses from the Eels, totally understand that. Would have been fun to have Blake Ferguson there. as a way of kind of, you know, just in terms of an excitement machine. So I think that's the other thing that Australia has kind of failed, which is to use this as an opportunity to pick exciting, entertaining players.
Yeah.
As opposed to some of these players who no one has ever heard of. You know, Cody Walker and Kalen Ponga, tick. I agree, they should be there. Ryan Papenhuyzen, I think, is a very good choice because I think, you know, he's up-and-coming kind of young player. I would have thought Munster should have been there as well, potentially, but they probably had too many backs. You know, Wade Graham makes sense. Ruben Garrick, I don't know who he is. No.
Oh, Manly, yeah.
No, from Manly. But I don't I'm not sure. Could you have picked other Manly players? I don't
know. Like Bronson Cherry from Sharks, I think, should have got to go. Or what about the he's probably injured, but the South Sydney fast guy who hasn't been that fast lately.
Oh, James Roberts.
Yeah. Pick him maybe or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's
where's Luttrell? Is Luttrell there?
Where's Luttrell? Yep. I think Luttrell would have been a great choice for the Nines.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows why. Nathan Brown of the Eels, again, I don't know why. I don't see him as a – I see Wade Graham because he's a ball player. And this is the thing. You need players who are tough, but it's a Nines game, and it's you need fast-paced, mobile forwards who are good with their hands. You know, that's why I'm talking about Kafusi. Wade Graham, good on you, because I think, you know, that makes sense. Did they pick a captain? I'm not sure if they've got a captain yet. Out of those players, look, you know, I don't know. Why isn't Boyd Cordner there? I guess that's another thing.
Mm.
Is this a situation like they had in the cricket with the 2020, the T20 teams? That they end up becoming totally different and divorced from the one-day squad, which is totally different from the test squad, potentially with different captains, which would be unusual. So, who else would you put there, Tish, in the Australian lineup?
Jake Trbojevic, is he there? And I've also got to say Cameron Murray, if you want fast, if you want a forward with great speed on the play of the balls, you'd pick Cameron Murray. You know, you'd pick Jake Trbojevic. I think they've just kind of got a little lost. Look, well done to the players getting selected. It is, as you said, a pathways. But, yeah, I think it's just lacking that flair that's needed for the Nines, because I've got to say the other nations are going to bring it. I know Tonga, you've heard reports Tonga's going to really field a great side. You know, I like the fact that you're talking about Sivo and Vunivalu on the same squad with, you know, Kikau. That, you know, Fiji is going to be a very strong squad, and you know, it's going to be a very even competition, I feel. And look, it's a new concept for everybody, so maybe, you know, this is kind of this is everybody's testing the water to see what works and what doesn't work. So should be interesting, no doubt.
Yeah, and just finally, the England, are you talking about the other squad? Just quickly, England has announced James Graham as their captain of the Nines World Cup squad, which is amazing.
Yes.
They've also got, well, it's good to give him a go. You know, Tom Burgess is there, Darryl Clark, Jake Connor, Ryan Hall, Ash Handley, Jack Hughes, Rhys Lynn, Jermaine McGilvery, Ryan Sutton, Sam Tompkins, Jake Truman, Liam Watts, Elliot Whitehead, Gareth Widdop, and George Williams round out the squad. And look, Ryan Hall, you know, let's not forget he was a much touted, you know, English winger or centre, I think, who was brought over by the Roosters and ended up playing most of the season in reserve grade, which is unbelievable. But, you know, so he will get his chance to sort of actually have a game and, for 9 minutes anyway. And so, yeah, it's good to see. And look, you know, Whitehead, Widdop, they've got a few of the front, you know, the front runners for their test squad as well. So England definitely taking this a bit more seriously than Australia is. So it remains to be seen what that will look like. But anyway,
they are missing one key player, I feel, and that is the number 9 for the Canberra Raiders.
Yeah.
Josh Hodgson. Yeah. Not there. Interesting again. So let's see how it all works out for both these teams.
And nor did they get the second row of the year, who has been playing great guns, which is for the Daly and John Bateman. Mm. You know, also eligible from Canberra. So
yeah, there you go.
There you go. But all right, we'll talk about that next week. Thanks for the opportunity for another six tackles.
Not a problem.
No, maybe not. But maybe I'll call it quits. Unlike the referees, we know when to call it quits, and I think we're going to call it quits. It's been a mammoth episode. Thanks, Tish, for reliving the drama and the controversy of the 2019 NRL Grand Final. This is rugby league, isn't it? It's nothing if not controversial.
Mm.
There's always some drama, and there's always plenty for us to talk about. You know, we've been doing this 144 times, and we hardly ever get to a point where we can't come up with something to talk about. So, you know, rugby league, it's a gift that keeps on giving.
So, absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you very much. Tish, over to you to wrap this up.
Well, Dr. T, I've got to say, 2019 season's been fun, but it's in the bag now. Well done to the Sydney City Roosters, taking it out 2 years in a row. But look, that's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.